This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. It was like a straight-A student suddenly receiving a failing grade when at this week's public health briefing before the Jefferson County Board of County Commissioners, public health officer after hospitalist after chief medical officer told the same alarming story. The North Olympic Peninsula, which throughout the COVID-19 pandemic has slipped by with minimal damage, has seen its short-staffed healthcare system overwhelmed by a storm surge of mostly unvaccinated coronavirus victims arriving at its emergency room doors, leaving little or no space for patients with other disorders. This week on The Compass, we bring you excerpts from that wrenching meeting. So now, let's go inside The Compass.
Unfortunately, the situation with COVID is getting more dire as we speak. Cases appear to be flattening nationally, which is hopeful for our future, but that is certainly not the case locally. There's a possible flattening of cases in Washington State as well. However, we are seeing that primarily driven by the large cities. So we're seeing a slow in cases in King County, particularly, and they just have such a large population that affects the state numbers. But the rest of the state, we're seeing a significant rise in cases, particularly on the east side of the mountains and, of course, out here. We are also seeing a dramatic rise in percent positivity. So in many regions, including our own, we're seeing a percent positivity as high as 20%, which really suggests that we're not catching anywhere near all of the COVID cases that are out there. Our current case rate in the last 2 weeks is 485 per 100,000. That's certainly the highest we have ever seen out here. In neighboring Clallam County, the case rate just passed 1,000 cases per 100,000, which is also unheard of for our region. We are continuing to see rises in hospitalization. Nationally, we're seeing hospitalizations start to flatten, primarily driven by a drop in hospitalizations in the South. They've kind of passed the peak of that severe peak, but a rise pretty much everywhere else. So it's certainly in Washington State, we are seeing hospitals stretch to capacity really throughout the state. We've moved to a system where new admissions get triaged to different hospitals throughout the state so that we can try to share the load, but every hospital is hurting. And I think actually, I'd be comfortable moving to our hospital colleagues, if that's all right, just to speak about the situation we're seeing in the medical system right now.
You want to kick us off, Mike?
Sure. My name is Mike Plant. I'm the administrator at Jefferson Healthcare, and I'll give you a quick overview of what's going on at Jefferson Healthcare. It's been a really difficult last 4 weeks. Our emergency department and inpatient activity has surged, mostly due to an increase of COVID patients precisely during a time when our staffing resources are most limited. Over the weekend, we peaked at 20 patients, with 7 being COVID positive. This is a heavy load for us and really strained and already tired and stretched team of caregivers. This level of activity and bracing for what might come is impacting our ability to take care of other care needs in the community. For instance, at one point on Saturday, we had 4 acutely ill patients in need of transfer, and we could not find a hospital in Seattle with an available bed to accept. And when a bed did come available, we could not arrange for transportation due to staffing and other resource limitations. So late Saturday afternoon, Olympic Ambulance was able to free up a rig, and we were able to begin transferring the most acutely ill. And by late Sunday, all of the patients had been transferred. I'm told by our hospitalist team, and Tracy's was the hospitalist this weekend, that transfers that typically take about 6 hours to complete, now we're taking 48. Behavioral health, nursing home, assisted living, and adult family home transfers are far more difficult because these facilities are limiting admissions because they're dealing with the same staffing shortages that we are. The net result is patients bordering in our emergency department for days when they have no clinical reason to be here. Additionally, because of the COVID surge, we have suspended all inpatient elective procedures, including 5 scheduled for last week and 3 scheduled for today and tomorrow. And I should note that these cases may meet some administrative definition of elective, but to the patient struggling with knee, shoulder, and hip pain, they're there is nothing elective about them, and we feel awful that we can't complete their surgeries and relieve their pain. We're beginning to see more patients where their COVID positive status is secondary and incidental to what brings them in. An acute condition may bring them in, and only after our COVID test do we find that they're COVID positive, which should not be surprising given the spike in community prevalence and disease. The biggest rate limiting factor continues to be staffing. We're facing the same crisis as every other hospital healthcare provider in the state. On top of all of this, we continue to operate all of our other COVID outpatient services like testing, vaccinations, monoclonal antibody clinic, and other services our community requires. Lastly, this is by far the worst it's been at Jefferson Healthcare. And to make matters worse, our caregivers are tired and a little fed up with the continuation of what we know can be more effectively curtailed. In light of this, we welcome the mask mandate and the restaurant vaccination mandate, and fully support all of the COVID risk mitigation protocols recommended by Dr. Berry. Dr. Berry attends our twice weekly calls, is in daily contact with our medical leaders, and is part of the COVID response team at Jefferson Healthcare. We appreciate her commitment to our community, and we stand by her leadership. And that concludes my comments.
Allison, what would you like to do? Would you like to hear from the medical team at Jefferson Healthcare?
Yeah, if that's all right. I think we could keep touching on the medical issues because I think that's really the most critical thing. I could briefly touch base on what's going on at OMC too. OMC and Forks Community Hospital, our neighboring healthcare system, are also overwhelmed far beyond what we're seeing at Jefferson right now. 40% of our patients over the weekend at OMC were COVID positive. And that's unheard of. You should never have more than 5% of your patients with a single diagnosis. So it's this surge and this strain on the staff is led by COVID. You know, 92% of those who are hospitalized for COVID are unvaccinated. This is driven by unvaccinated hospitalizations. And it's stretching us beyond what our medical system has the capacity to respond to.
Thank you. Well, again, welcome Dr. Mattern and Dr. Harris. You guys are really at the forefront of this. Appreciate you taking time to be here. I can't quite imagine what you're dealing with on a daily basis, but I'm happy to have you here and welcome your perspective.
Thanks. I'll let Tracy actually go first because she also has to get back to patient care.
So entirely unprepared comments here. And the reason for that is this is my 14th day in a row of taking care of patients. Coupled with the administrative response to what COVID is, I am intimately involved with the restructuring of the surgical plan, the emergency departments, and the acute care world, meaning the hospital. I could do really nothing but just echo what you're hearing from Dr. Berry with regard to the impact both on patients who are hospitalized, but equally important, the patients who are not yet hospitalized. I think the kicker here that you need to hear is, you know, not only is our hospital filled with COVID patients, there was a day early last week, 50% of our inpatient volumes were filled with COVID patients. The day-to-day impact of caring for patients with COVID and all of the stuff that entails. So I just want to give kind of a visual of, you're seeing a tiny little fraction of the way that I look when I walk into a COVID room. Instead of a shield and glasses and a mask, I have a big old space helmet, right? And a big old space suit that I put on and take off every time I go in. And I'm the doctor. I see these patients twice a day. The nurses see these patients 30 times a day. So they are in and out and in and out and in and out of this PPE is a word that you've heard. And what that means is neither can they provide the kind of care that they want to be able to give. They simply cannot provide care to as many patients as they could if they didn't require this level of infection control. But back to the impact on the rest of the community, you know, this is, I am your neighbor. I am a physician of 20 years and I live in this community. I have never seen a healthcare system taxed like this before. I trained in San Francisco in the later stages of the AIDS pandemic and it didn't look like this. I have lived through the H1N1 pandemic. It didn't look like this. There are patients who board in our emergency room, and what boarding in the emergency room means, I mean sitting in a gurney in an emergency department, while other emergencies are coming into the emergency department who should be cared in a longitudinal way by nurses who know how to do that. And instead, they're cared for by a staff that's used to dealing in the moment in an emergency right now. So, you know, to echo again, I think I'll give just the story. I'm trying to tell you the story and to create the picture of what it is to work in healthcare right now. There are nurses that are working as many days in a row as I am, right? These nurses are exhausted. by taking care of the bedside needs of these patients. They're really sick. They're sick for a long time. And it's emotionally impactful to feel like you can't do the job the way that you want to on a day-to-day basis. So in summary, you know, a civilized society said that it would protect its elders, and a civilized society protects its children. Without masking mandates, from my perspective, and without very clear and definitive action by this body, we're not doing those things of a civilized society.
Thank you very much, Dr. Harris, and thanks for your exhausting hard work on everyone's behalf.
I'll just echo everything that's been said and just make the point, you know, kind of dovetailing Dr. Harris's comments. You know, if you want to have a functional community, you want to have a healthy community, there are certain institutions that need to be sustained, healthcare being one of them, school being one, businesses being another. From the healthcare standpoint, at some point, as the resources get stretched and thinned, you can't provide the care that you want. So Dr. Harris is kind of pointing out in the inpatient setting how things are changing, how in the emergency department, but even on the outpatient setting, we are continually diverting resources now to manage COVID. So probably about 300 test results kind of coming through over the last 3 to 4 days through our testing, just to monitor and identify people who are sick or need testing through our system. That means nurses, that means lab, that means all these other resources. Mike alluded to what we're doing for outpatient surgeries and how we're changing lines. That is not, you know, in the early part of the pandemic, we didn't know that we had the equipment to take care of patients. Now it's, we don't have the staff to take care of the patients and we have to divert staff. And so we're diverting staff to try to offer monoclonal antibody treatments, which can be helpful for people in the early stage of illness. And that is something we want to do because it decreases hospitalizations, but it does not decrease hospitalizations the way that vaccinations decrease hospitalizations. And so the need to have more people vaccinated is what is really going to get us to a point that's going to reduce the strain in addition to other measures that we know work at this point. We're not at the same point in the pandemic where early on we weren't quite sure what works. There is a scientific body of evidence and the scientific and some scientific consensus. And when you see now that reputable professional organizations and healthcare professionals are gathering around what we know works, it's not always the most popular thing. And I know there's a lot of other misinformation and disinformation out there, and that's unfortunate. And I feel sorry for individuals who are struggling and trying to find their way through this, that are having to navigate and deal with also just the emotional consequences of facing what the real reality is. But here we're dealing with the reality, and we make decisions based on that. And resources here are not infinite. And you know, this weekend, while Dr. Harris was focusing on the inpatient, I spent a lot of time focusing on the outpatient, and one of my roles is hospice director. And admitting patients with COVID on the hospice team, which is also stretched thin. So even being able to provide proper palliative care to patients. And luckily, I had some fantastic nurses who worked with me this weekend and took their own time, not even, you know, as part of what was their shift, but came in and helped me to work to try to stem an outbreak at a local facility. No one likes mandates, but they exist, and we do these things. We take interventions because, unfortunately, when you don't get enough people choosing to practice or behave in a way that will stem a community pandemic, you have to take action. And I appreciate this group, and in particular, appreciate Dr. Berry's courage, and she has the full support of this organization. And I just want to also go on record as saying that any personal attacks on Dr. Berry is not in any way in line with what I think the values of Jefferson County's community are. I know we have differences, but there are things that are just not appropriate. And that's just beyond pale. So Dr. Berry, you have our support, and you just continue to let us know what you need from us.
Thank you. And I do want to acknowledge Dr. Mattern worked with my team, Department of Emergency Management, and fantastic nurses to come in over the weekend and hand deliver monoclonal antibodies to folks in a long-term care facility that had a massive outbreak. And the outbreak is so large that they don't have the staff that take care of their patients right now. And so we are stretched beyond what we can give, not just in the healthcare system, also in the public healthcare system. And our long-term care facilities are stretched far beyond what they can give to. In Jefferson, it's very, very strained. In Clallam, we're pulling volunteers to work the ER. So when you're coming to see people, when you're very ill, you're seeing someone who hasn't practiced in years. It's very different than what we are used to seeing in healthcare. And it is painful for those of us who have been fighting this fight for a year and a half to be at this point right now. And I want to acknowledge, we know how to stop this. If everyone went out and got vaccinated today, we could stop this. If everyone wore a mask when they were indoors and avoided these crowded indoor settings, we could stop this. We know how to stop COVID now. We just need everyone to do it. The vaccine is incredibly safe. It is incredibly effective. It would make all the difference. So if you are unvaccinated right now, please go get vaccinated today. Please wear a mask when you are indoors. As we've discussed, in response to this critical rise in cases and hospitalizations, the strain on our healthcare system, and in an attempt to keep our schools open, I did announce at the end of last week a mandate requiring proof of vaccination to enter restaurants and bars in our community. The primary reason for that is we know these are high-risk spaces. They are some of the only spaces left where we go in and take our masks off and stay there for an hour or two. And we know that transmission happens in those spaces. It's happened in Jefferson County. It's happened in Clallam County. And we know we can have very large outbreaks resulting from that. One of the largest outbreaks we've had in Clallam County resulted in a total of 117 cases from an unmasked spread within a bar. So it really is, it's a very strong driver of transmission. And so we're trying to do what we can to curtail it. And we are trying to do what we can to make this as focused of an intervention as possible. Our other options include closing these industries, closing restaurants, closing bars, closing places where people come together. And we are trying to not do that because we know our businesses have struggled through the pandemic and we want to keep them open. And so a vaccination requirement makes it safer for the staff who go there to work every day. And it makes it safer for the patrons who come to participate in those activities. It is actually much safer to go out to eat now if you are fully vaccinated. A quick reminder that this only applies to indoor dining. It does not apply to outdoor dining. So those who have outdoor seating, you can still participate in that if you are unvaccinated. You can still get takeout. I did hear from folks who were worried about how this would affect our local businesses. And I would encourage folks to, to the extent that you are able, support our local businesses. Get some takeout. Eat in the outdoor dining. If you're vaccinated, you can eat indoors. And it's a lot safer than it used to be. We can all support our businesses. This does not have to hurt our businesses. In fact, in many cases, I think it will actually help. There are a lot of people who have been staying away from restaurants because they don't feel safe there. And it's much, much safer if everyone's vaccinated in that space. Any questions from our commission?
I would just say I appreciate all that each of you are doing. Dr. Barry, Mike Glenn, Dr. Mattern, Dr. Harris, I appreciate everything you guys are doing. And I wish I was a nurse or a doctor so I could help, but I'm helping in the ways that I can and my community. And I appreciate you guys to the end of the world. So
fully support your decision, Dr. Barry. Partnership with Jefferson Healthcare is critical. I just really want to echo Commissioner Eisenhower and however we can help making this better, we want to do. So, and that includes taking the heat, totally support the scalpel-like mandate. And yeah, if someone has a problem with it, even though I didn't do it, I'll take the heat, please. Let's support our health officer. Let's support Jefferson Healthcare. We are really all in this together. And it's like the community result is what we are all looking for. And it's a challenge right now. And I appreciate the priorities that all of our healthcare practitioners are supporting.
I just want to call out the enormous sacrifices that all of you are making and that the many, many people that work with you and for you are making, and the kind of irony that the flip side of this argument is about personal liberty. And I just want to call out that these are our community members making enormous sacrifice. I'm going to call out to the superintendent and the dean of the high school yesterday spent the whole holiday testing kids in the high school auditorium. This is their holiday, the day before school starts. These are people in our community who are making enormous sacrifices way larger than wearing a piece of cloth on your face to go indoors, way larger than getting a vaccine that has proven to be very safe. These are enormous sacrifices, sacrificing your own potential health. So thank you. Just want to call out that irony. I am kind of surrounded by COVID right now. Many people in my circles are either testing positive or in quarantine. And so it feels to me like we have moved into kind of a new phase of the pandemic, or maybe it's just my own awareness. And I think Jefferson County has indeed moved into a new phase, as the data shows. And part of me wants to say, oh, this is just going to be the new reality. There's going to be a slow burn. But hearing from Jefferson Healthcare, I think that it's not a sustainable burn at all. So obviously very committed to the mitigations, totally support mandates. But is this the new reality? Like, is it okay to kind of accept that this is a new reality, that there's just going to be a number of cases around us?
Yeah, I would say COVID is a new reality, but this that we're doing right now is not a sustainable reality, nor is it a slow burn. It's a wildfire. And so what we need to do is get it back to slow burn. We can sustain a few cases. We can sustain, you know, shutting down outbreaks as they start. That's what public health is built for. That's what we can do and what we've been doing. But when we get this many cases, that's what makes us unable to successfully contact trace. That's what shuts down the hospitals, the long-term care. That's what starts shutting down society. We watch this happen in other places. We watched this happen in New York. We watched them have to put body trucks in the street. We watched all that happen. And I think we thought we had missed it, that we had done all the right things. And so it passed us by. And it did for a while. You know, we hit down 4 successful waves of COVID in this community. But then we just got hit by a tsunami of COVID on this 5th wave. And so it's crushing us now the way it crushed other places. But it doesn't have to. We can stop this. The number one thing I still want everybody to do is get vaccinated. But in the next couple of weeks, while we wait for that vaccine to kick in, we really need to avoid those indoor spaces. We can't be having big old weddings right now. We can't be having parties. We need to be really thoughtful about those indoor gatherings right now. And we need to wear a mask when we're indoors. Literally just wearing a mask and getting vaccinated, that makes the hugest difference. You can actually have a safe and functional society if you do all those things. But no, this is not our reality. This will not continue. It can't continue. But what we likely will continue to see is some cases. I think the hope that we would eradicate this virus, that unfortunately has passed for a variety of reasons, partly due to the virus, partly due to the politics and the way the vaccine rollout happened. A lot of different things played into that, but making this virus gone is not something we could see in the near future, but making this virus manageable, that is something we can do. We do it with vaccines, we do it with masks, and when things are this on fire, we do it by avoiding these congregate indoor spaces, especially if we are unvaccinated. If we're vaccinated in a fully vaccinated space, that's a much safer place to be.
I will say it probably is a slow burn in my world because all the people I'm talking about are vaccinated. And so it is, it feels less than wildfire.
You know, and that's something some of us are seeing is we're somewhat shielded because if we interact with other people who are following the COVID guidelines, we don't see a lot of our friends and family get COVID because it works. The things we're telling folks to do work. So you can insulate yourself. You can insulate your community. We just have to do it community-wide.
And I'll just emphasize that, you know, a great analogy, maybe if you haven't heard, is think about vaccination as being a wet log at this point, as opposed to being dry kindling. And I think, you know, early on when we looked at kind of what the vaccine was doing with the Alpha variant, you know, it was really stopping people contracting the virus altogether more efficiently. And we were, you know, seeing spread. But we're dealing with a different version of the virus now. The Delta variant can overcome that. So there are breakthrough cases, but it's important to understand that doesn't mean that the vaccine is not effective. It also doesn't mean that masks are ineffective. Both of these modalities together can stop the spread of virus. And even when people get infected when they have the vaccine, in most cases, it's going to be mild. It's going to be more to what probably the future reality could look like, which is that, oh, that's the common cold. It's the common cold. You kind of got it and it broke through, but we don't have people getting as sick. But the problem in our community is that we have an older community. We have a community with lots of people with chronic health issues. And some of those folks who did everything that they could and got the vaccine and protected, they don't get the same level of protection with the vaccine. vaccine. And that's why you still need community measures. And so if you think that the decision to wear a mask or to get the vaccine is simply about, well, what matters if it just happens to me? It's not just happening to you, either because you're getting sick enough and severely sick. And when we see 30, 40, 50-year-olds ending up in our ICU, it's people who are unvaccinated. They're taking up resources that are crowding out medical resources for other people. So that's problematic. But then also, if you thought that since your grandmother got vaccinated that you couldn't get her sick, that's not necessarily the case. She is more protected. But if you take a damp log and you put it around a big enough fire, weddings, indoor spaces, kind of big events, and they're exposed to enough virus, it will catch fire. And so I think you have to understand that all these mitigation, there's no kind of one magic bullet here. You layer on things until you get this under control. And then hopefully we'll get to the new reality where enough people have immunity and we're not seeing the kind of resource intensity from our system that we do now.
Given that it's the first day of school in a couple of our school districts here in the county, you feel confident that those kind of layered approaches will continue to be successful? Because I will say in Port Townsend, we had almost no transmission, if any, in the school last year within the district. So is that the rationale for opening even while case counts are so high that it's an environment where you can layer on those mitigations successfully?
That's why we open, is that not only do we know that school is critically important for children and their working parents, but also it's a place where we can put into place all of these measures. And so that's why last year, I know Jefferson didn't have a ton of cases in the community, but you didn't have any in the schools. Clallam had some spikes in the community and still didn't have any in the schools. Because if you follow the medications, they work. And the kids are great at following the medications. If you want to see someone wear a mask right, it's kids. they can really do this quite well. And so we can really reduce their risk in that space while getting them the education that they need and deserve. And so that's why we open schools. It's still at risk though, if we see this many cases, primarily because if we get to the point where our public health system is exhausted beyond reason and we can't contact trace anymore, and if we're getting so many cases in individuals in the schools that the schools can't assist us in contact tracing, that is the thing that would push us over the edge to closing schools.
Department of Emergency Management Director Willie Bentz was the last to speak at the BOCC briefing. He noted that time is quickly running out for public employees to receive the vaccinations required under Governor Jay Inslee's mandate in order to be fully vaccinated by the October 18th deadline. And Bentz repeated appeals heard from the others for retired doctors, nurses, or other former credentialed healthcare professionals to step up in this emergency and volunteer to administer vaccinations or to help out at the hospital. This is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Saturdays at noon and repeats on Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.